Blog Talk Radio.
All right. You know, somehow, some way. We'll be right back. Some interesting times. Interesting times. I am Thomas Berry filling in tonight for my man Lee Vaughn. Brother Lee allowed me to use Real Radio, which if you don't know, it stands for Radio Established to Address Life, to speak on the coronavirus as well as things that can be modified and done at this particular time. I've invited three of my brothers to participate. I shouldn't even say participate because we do these things in private, but we're going to allow you guys to hear some of the dialogues that we have. And here's the thing. We know that the outbreak is out. We know that people are in a frenzy. We know some people are. Some people are still not taking it serious. And we are seeing this thing change. We've seen this thing go from being a boomer virus to recently hearing about millennials who have been impacted by this virus. This went from being black folks can't get this virus to, in Milwaukee, the leader carriers of this virus are African-American men. So we're going to invite you guys on this serious conversation and dialogue. And feel free to jump into the chat and you can discuss with us, or you could just simply call into the show at 818-691-7348 and join us in this discussion. But we are certainly wanting to make sure that everyone feels welcome. So I got my first brother who chimed in, Brother Nick Muhammad. Hey, Brother Nick, how you doing today?
Good, brother. I'm ready to get into this dialogue, man. I appreciate you putting this together.
Oh, man, no doubt, man. Well, since I got you on first, and we'll just go ahead and do what we do. As people come on, we'll add them into the conversation. If they don't come on, then we'll just have the conversation ourselves. For the most part, brother, you know, man, let's talk about this. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, soon as this virus happened, and, you know, we knew that, you know, for the most part, that this was going to be some type of calamity for, American descendants of slaves. What's some of your thoughts on this virus since that conversation?
Well, since that conversation, one of the things that continuously bothers me is there's a kicking of the can when it comes to some of the most critical aspects of what we need to be doing as a community. And one of the things that just bothers me is the fact that we cannot actually diagnose everybody's evidence for ourselves. Like, we're beholding way too much on way too many other external people and relying on the interpretation and kindness of critical data and analysis. We don't have hospitals, so we're subject to whatever they tell us, whatever they come up with as a vaccine. Even if some of us are inside process, we still can't guarantee that our best interest is at heart with the way things shake out. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm learning. That's my big lesson right now, is that there is no substitution for black unity. And this is just a wake-up call. And I was looking at some of the other communities, and I noticed there was a panic going on, particularly in our community. And one of the reasons that panic was so prevalent, we didn't have a backup plan. While everybody was sitting around and you know, some of us demonizing Asians and, you know, not realizing that, you know, the Chinese are separate from the Hmong, are separate from the Japanese and Korean and so forth, but they have supply chains. They have stores.
Right.
They have contingency plans for their community. We're sitting here literally acting as if we don't need each other in a critical time where we need each other more than ever, and we need to keep each other's interests at the forefront. But I'll stop right there, because that's just the tip of the iceberg for me.
Yeah, for me, brother, you know, what I've noticed is that nothing's changed with us. Yeah, I know a lot of people are worried about things, but I don't believe that we're ready to make fundamental changes. And that's what bothers me. It's almost, you know, the analogy of the dodo bird. We are ripe to be the dodo bird. We ingratiated ourselves in ideology that white folks don't believe themselves. We've ingratiated ourselves in selfishness that the plantation owner has put upon us. And what I'm seeing is us not adapting like those other groups have already done. You know, if you are a single mother with children that you can't protect when this thing goes worse, you're a plumb dumb fool for not getting yourself somewhere where somebody can protect. You have one rule in this life, and that's to protect your children. If you are a brother who can offer those services to those women, you need to be offering those services. Now, listen, I know I'm saying this as if it's easy, but, you know, Brother Nick, in our community, one plus one don't always equal two. And part of that is the ideology gap that we have between us. You know, you can't put those one and those ones and make two together if there's a gaping bridge when it's white psychology at play. So we're primed right now at this point to struggle. You get what I'm saying? Because we can't adapt. We haven't put ourselves in a position to adapt to what's going on.
I totally agree with that. The reality is our values have been redefined over the years. They've been slowly eroded and replaced with erroneous things. And what this pandemic showed us is that no wrong, you were convicted in something egotistical. A lot of us were caught off guard when the push came to shove. There's a lot of us right now sitting with no toilet paper. There's a lot of us right now sitting with no way to protect themselves. There's a lot of us right now that are sitting with children, knowing full well that they would rather have somebody else working with them to get through this pandemic. And they're hoping and praying that everything that the government says they're going to do actually comes true, and they're hoping and praying that this thing does not go beyond the time frame projected, and they're hoping and praying that they can get back to some of the things that they did for their livelihood and making a living.
Mm.
Reality
and,
is
and that's,
nothing
yeah.
is off limits at this point.
Mm.
Nothing's going to be the same. That's just the reality.
Right. Now, that's definitely true, brother, that nothing will be the same. And the sad part about it is that I see people making plans for birthday parties. I saw somebody asking, you know, for a planner. I see people talking about real estate they're going to buy, stocks they're going to buy. And I'm like, man, you might mess around and weather this storm and find out that that dollar won't even spend the same. You might weather that storm and find out that those parties that you say you want to have would be off limits because they'll be saying that, hey, since you haven't commingled since the past 6 months, and that's how we killed the virus, we don't need you guys commingling amongst each other until we tell you so. So I think that a lot of our people are not ready for a new normal, and they have a crazy trust in the government that's never been faithful to us to begin with, brother.
And that's my apprehension. Everybody is wanting everything to work perfectly, and we want to put morality into this system when we know this system. But like, we're sitting in Minnesota right now. We can't even get them to protect black children, right? When this
yeah.
thing all shakes out, what they're probably lining everybody up for is, you know, whatever the vaccination is, and making sure that we take it so that they, quote, preserve the curve. The problem is
right.
they've already stated that over 80% of the cases in China actually recovered with no problems.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't change the fact that the way this particular virus operates, it actually targets, and at first they were talking about, you know, the elderly. But the reality was it was people with compromised immune systems and respiratory issues. They're particularly
right.
at fault. The governor came out today and said that 40% of the state can expect to get this. And it was actually 40 to 80%. Just think about that. 40 to 80%. If we got a 6 million population in Minnesota, it's 40 to 80% of that. So we're talking anywhere from 3 million upward to just under, 5 million. Four point five or whatever. That's a lot of people that get it. The death toll they were looking at was around 76,000 total. If we didn't flatten the curve. Now the thing that's interesting to me is that we got people that are ignoring it that are carrying on literally saying that they don't believe in, out of sight, out of mind. And that sounds good until you get hit with it. Now I've heard cases from people that I personally know that actually have it. And the whole
what do you hear about that?
Now, the reality is, what'd you say?
How do you know, like, some of the similarities of the people who already got it? Like, some of the similarities as far as habits or maybe behavior?
Here's the one thing. The one thing that I do know from almost everybody that I've heard that has it, there was either one of a few things present. They had asthma. They smoked cigarettes or they smoked weed or they were vaping. Really, really heavy. And if you remember, right before all this happened, there was a rash of cases of people having respiratory illnesses because of vaping, and it was sweeping through the country, and they were trying to tell people to stop doing it.
Right.
But, people want what they want when they want it, and at the end of the day, everybody wants to escape. I get it. But not when it's going to come at your expense. And there's been plenty of brothers and sisters I know that right now they're on pins and needles because they're trying to do what's right. They have compromised immune systems. Some of them have compromised respiratory systems. And they're nervous. And when on top of the panic, when they got to go get something, and you got people online talking about, I got it. I'm gonna go give it to as many people as I possibly can. And you got white supremacist groups supposedly threatening to go places just to, expose people to it. You got people talking about, they're going to run out and give it to the cops and all types of stuff. The reality is, if you the second you sacrifice your humanity is for somebody else's, against somebody else's humanity, you're no better than the people you're saying that you're fighting against.
No doubt.
And you're not going to be rewarded. You know what I mean? Because you think that you're going to be able to contain this thing in your body and go and target who you want to target. No, that's going to hit everybody around you and some of the people you might not even think or even know have compromised health issues.
Well, I think, they say that with money exposes people for who the worst of people. But I think calamities like this also expose people. Because what I'm noticing is that most people have not changed their behavioral pattern. They've actually just exposed it more. If you're self-indulgent, I haven't seen self-indulgent people become generous because of this pandemic. I haven't seen selfish people decide to say, hey, I got extra room in my house. Come sleep with, I got relatives at home. Come sleep with us. I haven't seen those people who make sure that they took all the money up under their mattress, go and drop off money and food to people who don't have it. So this virus, to me, is exposing America to Americans, or the American attitude to all of the Americans. Because you always hear this, well, if there's ever some big outbreak or what have you happen, we're going to come together. No, what you're going to do is you're going to run to the stores and you're going to buy up all of the hand sanitizer, the toilet paper, and everything else that you can't use by yourself. Some people are reselling this stuff online. Some of these people are just buying it just because. They're saying, hey, man, if you hand sanitizer won't help you, there's not a disease where you got to wipe your ass continuously. So toilet paper doesn't matter. But, it just shows you, Brother Nick, that the American way, it used to be an old saying, waste not or something like that. And the American way is want all and waste all. Because
I guarantee you, when people go through the checkbooks and they see all of the things that they bought throughout this time, you're going to see very few necessities that would have helped them against this particular virus. You'll see a lot of things that people just bought because of that nature.
Well, and that's the thing about the virus. Like, there's several different opinions in the medical community about it. There's the side that's saying that this is one of the most deadliest strands of the virus that they've ever seen, and there's a lot of data on it. There's a lack of data on it, and they don't know how to predict anything. Then there's another that says this is one of many different versions of the flu, and it's been around for decades. And at the end of the day, it's the only people who are at most risk for it are people with medical complications. Either way it goes, whichever side you decide to deal with, whichever side you co-sign from, there's still a duty for the people who are most vulnerable in the state. Like, I do my best to take care of myself. I don't sit back and take that for granted, and just because I could take care of myself. So even if I was to contract it, the data is showing that I would be able to bounce back. But in the midst of me trying to bounce back, if I'm out here talking to, you know, my mother or some of my elders or, you know, some of the young kids that I know that have asthma, and I'm sitting up here and I'm breaching this protocol and exposing them to my toxins, even though I can handle it, I'm unnecessarily risking their lives. And the reality is that's what this really boils down to. And I have to say, I know some people, and I've been privy to hear people actually going out and figuring out how they can get involved and help people, several people.
Mm.
And I want to send a special shout out to, you know, my mothers and my sisters that literally work field, which is why I'm so upset about this national debate over the coronavirus stimulus package, because they're sitting inside of hospitals without having enough sanitizer, masks, and precautionary equipment to be able to handle the crisis. While we sit up and we fight and we try to make things into a partisan argument, they're literally sitting up unprotected on the front lines where people with the virus are coming to them, and that's their job, and we're not protecting them. That's you know, another side of the conversation. I'm sure we'll get to it, but we got to recognize who's really holding the country together right now. The people holding the country together are the people that everybody loves to disrespect. The cashiers at the grocery store. Right? The gas station attention.
Man.
Come on, man.
People are not treating those people better. I've seen some despicable shit, and I'm going to be honest with you. People are playing Russian roulette with other people's lives. Now, you know, everybody's worried about this virus. And if those other people at the cashier, they got to touch your money, they got to hand you things back, they're putting their life at risk to make pennies on the dollar. Let's be real. And what I saw today.
And not just there.
You know, when you are the person, it's different for the people that they don't see. When you're sitting there and somebody got over $500 worth of stuff, and then they're debating you and asking for certain things to be placed back while they're holding up the line, and you have to touch these things while they are complaining. And then when they held these people up for 45 minutes, and then they said, oh, let me go wash my hands afterwards, while these folks had to stand on the cashier on the register. And I say, man, this is a part of this Americanization. And let's be real, these weren't even American folks who were doing this to them. But the problem is this is acceptable now. This is now acceptable in America, though, because it wasn't, hey, you know, I could have it, you could have it, let me just get what I got to get and get out your way so I can make sure you don't get sick and somebody else gets sick around me. It was, I'm going to go get what I'm going to get, and I don't care if I cough on you 1,000 times. I don't care if I touch on 1,000,000 things that you got to put back and somebody else got to touch. Meanwhile, I don't even have no gloves on, right? I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to get me. And what I'm telling you, what I see is, I'm one of those people that, just like how you were raised, I was raised with manners. When people are rude and disrespectful, that's the one thing that will make me cuss you out in public. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Don't be rude and disrespectful to folks that's serving you. And what I tend to see
way too much is acceptability. Oh, this person ain't from here, or this person is young, or this person is old. No. Manners still matter no matter where you at. You know when you're being disrespectful, and you know when you're going overboard. So I'm watching this, and I'm like, think about, you know, because my ex, she's a nurse. And, you know, she's showing me her face wrapped up, hands the whole nine, and she's like, yo, this is my new normal. This is what I got to go through as my new normal. And when you sit back and you think about the new normal that people are going through, and you're saying, are we adapting to this? No, we're not adapting. What people are typically doing, and this is why fools perish. What folks are doing is they're diving deeper into what they were doing before the virus came. And you're not going to be able to make it out on the other side if we go with business as normal times 10. The selfishness is not going to work.
Agree 100%. And I mean, the reality is, I'm about, if I had to put a percentage on it, I'm about 40% believer of, you know, the pandemic, and I'm 60% skeptic, but I'm still going to remain err on the side of caution just because I'm responsible for so many people, and there's so many people that I want to make sure are okay, right? And this is just what real human beings and humanitarians, real men and real women, this is just what we're going to do anyway. But the reality is we're not really assessing what our value systems have been for the last few decades, what our moral sensibilities has been like for the last few decades. And right now, you know, there's a reality that all of us are actually not okay. There's people right now that sitting in those walls is destroying them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody there to help them. There's no, you know, no outlet for them. And they probably can't afford, you know, therapy or psychiatrists. And the reality of the matter is, we're in quarantine, and it is of no fault of their own, and there's going to be a lot of abnormalities that develop and happen as a result that we're not going to hear anything about until after the fact.
I agree, man.
And that's not to mention.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, not to mention children who are sitting at home with parents who were ill-equipped from the beginning to deal with their kids on a full-time basis and need help, right? The school was the daycare. The school was, you know, the outlet. The school was cooking breakfast and lunch, and you know, at the end of the day, they could skimp on dinner. They're not there anymore. Now we really got to figure out how we're going to turn the corner on this going forward, what our values as a community needs to be. And I'm not sitting up here trying to argue with people about we're not a monolith. Well, sometimes we need to start acting like we are. Because at the end of the day, all this individual mess left a lot of people on the outs. A lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know about y'all, but I'm uncomfortable with the way that we showed up in this crisis as a community. I'm uncomfortable with the vulnerability.
We got Travis Smith on the line. You want to join in? Hey, what's going on,
brother Travis?
Hey, peace and blessings, brothers.
Hey,
how y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Okay.
So, what are your thoughts on everything that's going on? We hear. I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of it, but we just giving our feedback on this, on the current status of this pandemic.
Man, you know, I'm perplexed, man. You know, I've had one cousin pass away from it, and then Thomas knows my cousin Pig just got diagnosed with it tonight.
Oh, wow.
So he's currently taking care and trying to heal. He wasn't feeling well and went in and was having a hard time breathing, and they gave him a breathing machine. So his results came back tonight. positive for it. And I caught the part where Nick was saying he put out his percentages on where he's at with it in terms of skepticism and the opposite of that. And I'm similar, you know, cautious as well, like you noted, because, you know, you're responsible for so many and you got a lot of people depending on you.
Right.
So I'm in that same vein. I view this as phase one, because when 9/11 happened, it was a stage, it was a setting for heightening certain things to be poured off on the population. And the way I feel about this is that currently this is phase one. I caught Thomas talking about Nicole's new normal, and I think this is setting the stage for a new governing normal on the population. But I do believe that it should be taken serious, because I think anytime there's a so-called conspiracy, I think you have to be cautious. You know, we know the etymology of quarantine is 40 days. And so in this 40-day period, exactly what is being set up for us to eventually start acquiescing to, whether we want to or not. And I think that's something that we have to be keen about.
Agreed. Yeah.
Nah, that's definitely real, man. Sorry to hear that about Pig. Hopefully he gets well, man.
Yeah,
but you know, I was telling Nick, man, you know, it's one of those things that they were saying on the news yesterday, that in Milwaukee, the leader getters of the virus, or the carriers of the virus, are African-American men who have become sick and become ill. And I was telling Nick, now it's crazy how 2 weeks ago we were saying that it was not a black thing. Remember, they couldn't find it in Africa. And now you look around and you see all these black folks who are getting it. They said it was a boomer virus. I heard today that at least we have at least three young African-American men who are 21 years or younger. So all of these things that we were stated at first is coming back to not be so true. What do you brothers take on that?
Well, I know that was a large yellow fever scare in the 1800s, and one of the first myths that went out was that black people couldn't get it. And so they called in some black leaders to help serve as nurses, if you will, or community health aides. And so when I had posted a piece on that stating that, I think it was when one person died in Egypt, but they were a European, and the brother replied, so we still at zero. And I shared that post, but one of the things I put at the top in my own words was that whenever they catch a cold, we catch the flu. And as Nick noted, our community, you know, I think you say he was worried about how we showed up, and you know, we came into this thing vulnerable already. And so anytime there's a crisis amongst the country in any manner, you know, we tend to get hit the worst. My thoughts on it, T, is that I was hoping we didn't fall for that black folks couldn't get it, because it only sets us up to become the prime carriers. And we're so nurturing and caring anyway. You know, we're going to be looking out for everybody and take the bullets. So, I didn't bite that pill at all.
Yeah,
and that's
going to
be a critical.
Go ahead, Brother Nick.
Oh, go ahead, bro.
Well, I was going to say that was one of the things for me, what I really didn't want us collectively to fall for anyway. There's never been a time where white folks would be sitting around dropping dead and it wouldn't impact us somehow in some way, right? And, you know, it was definitely impacting the Chinese. What I was thinking about the Chinese is that there's no way possible for it not to have impacted Africa so much when you have so many folks from China who's over in Africa. Like, if this is something about just surface touching, like, look, the continent in that country are doing business with each other and they're traveling. You know, you got dignitaries traveling back and forth. Like, no, because it's not reported. It's not necessarily what it was, you know, or what it is. And, you know, my uncle
He had came down with pretty much symptoms of the same thing. And, you know, talked to one of my cousins, and he's like, yeah, you know, that's exactly what he had. And they misdiagnosed him. They literally, he got double pneumonia with a shot of the flu. That's what he was told. So these are the things that are happening, and I believe when they were telling a lot of us that people were dying from the flu, I just believe that a lot of the medical leaders in this country didn't know what they were dealing with, and they were misdiagnosing a lot of the patients.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't corona a version of the flu anyway?
Yeah, that's what I'm told, that they're part of the same family.
Right. So it's not so much that it's not the flu. It's just a different strand that's deadlier, that preys on,
right,
you know, those with compromised immune systems.
Well, it's worse than the flu, and if it's a variation, you can't treat it the same. And if you're not diagnosing it correctly to people, then you could be doing things that could speed up their death. So that misdiagnosing, you know, that's very important, you know.
That's a fact, and I think there was a lot of people saying that they actually had these same symptoms, a severe cold, you know, back in November of last year and over the holidays, and it swept through. I remember when we came back from, in Memphis?
Yeah,
no,
we were in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky. And I swear there was about that swept through the entire staff that week, and everybody
mm-hmm.
got sick. I know, at least I know I did. But I know that it wasn't. Yeah, it was a peculiar one. But at the end of the day, to the point I was trying to make earlier, I don't like the fact that we don't have enough people that we actually trust with the capabilities
to step in
and give diagnosis when we need it. Like, this should be a big wake up call to Black America. We got to start prioritizing ourselves and standing up for what we actually need, and creating aspects of a monolithic community for things that matter. You know, health is one of those things we can't afford to keep being in the dark about. We got to stop playing with you know, our bodies and what's important, and acting like, you know, just because you're young, it can't affect you until, you know, the youth began to become the face of it. And there's some other statistics just in Minnesota alone that should send an alarm off in our heads, and that's the fact that we make up the majority of the homeless and the low income and the poverty stricken in the state. So as everybody's quarantined into their nice snug homes, a lot of our people are literally sitting in shelters where they have no choice but to be around people in high capacity, receiving the worst food. Right? And it could be any one of us. Any one of us are you know, a couple paychecks away from being there.
Man, certainly.
And the state knows this.
And that's the scariest part about it, because when I'm watching us talk about this thing online, that's not the reality that folks are doing. That's not the conversation people are having. People are literally, like I'm watching dance challenges. I'm watching weed smoking challenges. And listen, man, you can do whatever you want to do. Listen, it's your freedom. Do it how you got to do it, right? So I'm not trying to get on the mountain and preach that. It's your life. You either going to live with it, or you're going to die with it. You're going to get it how you live, or you're going to die how you live. Either which way, that's on you. But when I keep thinking about our disposition, especially here in the Twin Cities, and I'm watching how we are responding, we're trying to act as if, like, we're about to come out of this and it's going to be some normalcy that's going to shake free, that's going to be the same. Nothing after this is going to be the same. Like, you can't – folks won't be able to pay who are not getting – full paychecks, won't be able to pay rent for months or pay their utilities for months. A lot of folks are losing their jobs. So I'm trying to figure out, when we're talking about all of these things, there's no – I've yet to see the contingency conversation online in no city, no community, about what are you going to do next. And I feel like that's the dodo bird mentality. We just think we're going to stick our heads in the sand with our ass up, and we're going to duck this thing, and it's going to skip past us. And the reality of it, brothers, is they're going to end up taking our heads off and leaving our bodies limp.
Well, I'm going to have to speak against that in the name of the ancestors. I agree with your diagnosis. I'm just, at this point, I'm trying to get us to shake awake, to wake up. And I think unless we do that, we're going to be looking at your scenario 9 times out of 10. But again, it gets back to our value system. What's important to us? We become so materialistic and so codependent and so serviced that a lot of us don't even realize what a world is like when you don't have a grocery store and you have to put your hands in the dirt and produce food for yourself. Think about this. We don't even have the ability, in most cases, to make toilet tissue. Right? The fundamental aspect of being able to tread water right now, everything that's necessary, we're not producing. We're only consuming. And at the end of the day, we've kicked agency for our community down the road so far that we literally just forgot about it and just figured somebody would always do it. And the other thing that I like that's bittersweet is that we began to realize what was essential to the momentum of a society as a whole. So many people lost their jobs when they found out their jobs weren't essential, and now the governor is locking down the state and asking everybody to mandatory shelter in come Friday. And the reality is a lot of people realize that their job was not something that was essential to the economy. It wasn't essential to the state moving.
Hey, you know, that's one of the major things, brother, that we're dealing with, is that when you can't face your reality, and that's kind of the threat that we're dealing with as a community. When you can't face your reality, when we know that we got folks out here, like I was stating earlier, some of these baby mamas and baby daddies need to be reconciliating right about now, because it makes no sense to be pouring this much money into white hands afterwards and knowing you about to come out here with the short end of the stick. It makes no sense to be out here in a situation where if things become more scarce, you're going to have to get into a situation where you're going to have to deal with people possibly knocking on your door, kicking in your door to get whatever you got. And we should be thinking about the worst coming. Everybody, the idea of, man, I'm about to just go buy me some cheap airline tickets and go kick it afterwards, man, that's pie in the sky. Hey, somebody got background noise.
Let's see if I can mute it. It might be me. I'll be playing a game here.
I think you're 100% correct, bro. But that's a part of that cognitive dissonance, right? We don't want to believe that life is going to change. So a lot of us are just projecting. They're trying to get back to where they're comfortable. A lot of us don't handle change well at all. One of the first things that we're getting ready to lose, mark my words, is going to be fiat currency. They're getting ready to say the dollar is one of the most germ-laden, which it is, germ-laden things out here, and it's one of the quickest ways for pathogens and viruses to get passed around, right? So they're going to eliminate that. We're going to go to a cashless society, and at the end of the day, there might be a prolonged quarantine, self-quarantine period. We're all bracing for these 2 weeks. The way that they're explaining it, no one is giving anything concrete. The data is too new for us to make any conclusive opinions or conclusions on what we're actually dealing with. And for all we know, again, we have absolutely limited capacity to really challenge anything that we're hearing. We can do basic math and see that the rate of death right now is not on par with H1N1, which happened under Obama.
Right.
But at the same time, we're trying to err on the side of caution, but we still are in a very messed up, precarious position because we can't verify anything.
Mm.
The only thing we can do is take what they say and then diagnose it afterwards, after all the decisions
yeah.
and the impact has already been made.
That's
I mean,
very true.
And that's what irritates me the most. We literally sit around. We don't own our stores. We don't own our clinics. We don't own our schools. We don't own the – I mean, hell, the food that our kids eat every day. Like, we're not even we're completely plugged into the matrix. I feel like Keanu Reeves, when you know, he was looking at all the marks on his hands and he was plugged in at every single aspect of his being, head to toe. And that's black folks in America. And they're living off of us just like they did in the Matrix, and we need to wake up and begin to realize that we have to do for ourselves in some capacity. Some things are just worth it. And like you said, Thomas, if this thing prolongs, people can sit here and get mad all they want. Y'all can be cynical all you want. But the reality is other communities have a game plan. Read the news. Like, guns are sold out. Ammunition is sold out. You got to ask yourself, what is that about? And look at how we're acting when we've lost just two resources, toilet tissue and hand sanitizer. What do you think is going to happen when it comes down to more food, water, diapers, insulin? If you think they're going crazy over toilet paper, wait until you're dealing with water and food.
So what ways
Absolutely.
Do you brothers think that we can do? What ways do you brothers think that we should do to actually curb that? How can we fix that or change some of that?
Well, the reality is we're going to have to change a lot of things about who we are. Like, we got to get comfortable with sacrifice for the greater good. And what that's going to mean is some of us have to who actually have the skill set to diagnose this data. We got to figure out, you know, who amongst us actually have the skill sets to help us understand what it is that we're looking at. We got to figure out ways to bury the hatchet with family and loved ones, because at the end of the day, if it comes down to it, those are going to be the first people that you need. And if y'all ain't talking about a contingency until you need a contingency, you're done deal. And we can either learn that, like the old proverb says, there's some of us that are going to learn at the word. They're going to hear this, and they're going to say, you know what? That makes sense. Let me be the first to try to bury the hatchet. And let me work with as many of my family members as I possibly can, friends as I possibly can, to get to a contingency plan. And then there's going to be those of us that are cynical as hell all the way up until they're locked in their house beyond 10 days. Then it's going to be, what are we going to do? They're going to be the main ones running around here panicking, thinking that they didn't need nobody, and all of a sudden they're claiming that they're being abandoned. No, you chose to act like you didn't need nobody all the way up until you needed somebody.
You know, I would say for me, what I think that folks should do is definitely reconcile a lot of those differences, not only in their communities, but also with their family members, like you stated. But also, I also think that we need to do a greater assessment of where we are as a people. Because I feel like the assessment, if you got the wrong type of assessment, you're gonna go backwards, right? And all, you know, we got this thing where all skin, you know, skin folk, we treat them like they're kin folk, and everybody ain't kin folk. It's some folks that look like us that's looking to make a way, make a nice profit off of what's happening to folks now. You know, there's still people that are still plotting to make money off of this, you know, mm-hmm. just like white folks. There's some of us who are still plotting to somehow separate themselves. So what we have to do is we have to do an inventory of who's in and who's out. And on top of doing an inventory of who's in and who's out, we have to create a new normal. And our new normal might just be what it was when we all grew up. A simple new normal might be to do more with less. Simply. We don't need them to tell us, because we've already been operating with a lot of the less. But when I see people online talking about, man, I need my hair cut, I need my nails done, it's like, what the hell you need your hair cut and your nails done for? To sit in isolation? You really think that those photos are that mean that much that you need you got to have fresh nails for that or fresh fade for that? Like, are y'all serious? And then you're asking people to come to your home. Man, you might be infected. You may not be sick, but that person coming over to your house to get that little funky-ass $25 you want to pay him for a haircut or funky-ass $50 for your toes and your nails done, that ain't worth their life. And that shows that you got some audacity to be asking. So what I think, brothers, is we're going to have to really reshape some of these comforts, and we might have to get back to some of us going to have to learn how to sleep on some floats. Because that's what it might come down to, because some folks going to go homeless. Some people are going to go homeless after this. You trust me. When this is all over and said and people aren't going back to work, how long do you think that these landlords are going to say that they're going to go without money and they got to turn around and pay those banks back? Because I haven't heard the government come up with a way on how they were going to buffer the American people from these mortgages that are due.
You see, that's the other thing that I had a strong opinion about, because if they're going to pay certain banks, you know, to the tune of $1 trillion a day, that should not be going to anybody but the mortgage holders, period. The mortgage holders should be the main ones. The mortgage holders should be the main ones that those benefits go to first and foremost. Like, we went through this with Obama, and nobody wants to talk about this. When it happened the first time with Obama, and all those golden parachutes came out, we literally should have learned from that and realized that the priority is not sitting up here acting like businesses don't need capital. If they got employees, they just need to make sure that all that money goes to the employee first and foremost. The second thing is, when it comes to that bill, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, I don't like the fact that there's a national pandemic and crisis, and there's literally people that are depending on Congress and the Senate and the president to get this right. And at a time when we just need people to take action to literally mitigate people's shortfalls for this month, and we're trying to force everything into it with the Ron Emanuel psychology of never let a good crisis go to waste. While people actually suffer, people are actually out here stressing, and they're not in a good position, period. And there's a lot of people who say, you know, the Republicans this, the Democrats that, but the reality is they're both playing us.
Dr. Kirk, Trav, what's your take on that?
Well, I think it's right. I think y'all pretty much nailed it. I think also what we have to do in this situation, in addition to things that were already stated, is starting to strengthen ourselves in those areas that Nick pointed out that we're deficient in. And we have people selling toilet tissue. It's not popular, but there are black folks out here who sell some of these things that we don't connect with, and they're not mainstream or they're not really known. And so I think it's important to connect with those sources to make sure that we can somehow exacerbate their chain and make them more of a resource to the greater community. Also,
hey,
think
bro,
the notion
point,
too,
hey,
as you,
Trav, at this point right here, they should be slinging that. They should be slinging that shit like hotcakes, bro. You wouldn't be telling me.
And
it's
absolutely,
story,
absolutely.
My face would be all over social media.
Absolutely, I agree. But as a thing, I think buyblack.com, where you can find sisters selling tissue and toothbrushes and a lot of basic home necessities, cleaning stuff. I know Master P Boys just came out with some cleaning supplies. Just to point out some black-owned folks. But I think also the notion that T mentioned, where you said that, you know, all skin folks ain't our folks. We got to really take a serious look at that as far as the black thought and what it is and what it isn't and who's on the side of the line and who's on the other side of the line. Because there's a lot of factors play into that in terms of where people have lived, how people have lived, who people are choosing to align with and associate with, what long-term plans folks have that we may not be privy to. But we really seriously have folks among us who are not for us. And I think anytime you're in a situation like this, you got to know who's with you and who's not. You know, and Nick pointed out, you know, family and mending things for family. I think that's paramount. You know, I think that's highly essential. And, you know, family's not always named either. You know, family is sometimes the relationships and the bond that you build. Because some of us treat each other better than some of our own family folks treat us.
True.
You know, and so recognizing that reality too. And so that just broadens the terms of family to, you know, the greater community, who's family and who isn't. And, you know, really strengthening those bonds. You know, I really can't crystallize it any better. I think Nick hit it in terms of a lot of us aren't sufficient, you know, self-sufficient, definitely, when it comes to a crisis. You know, how many of us can actually get in the earth and bring forth what we need in terms of food, clothing, and shelter? And so those are some things that I think we have to look at, to where if one goes down, another can step up and provide that skill, as opposed to depending on who we declare to be our enemies.
Now, Brother Rodney Smith chimed in. He said, now's the opportunity to organize and plan. If we execute after the epidemic, he said they're doing some things digitally. If we wait until it's over, we miss an opportunity. We're even going to do a virtual version of the summit. We established community groups to grow specific garden items. He's saying these are things that they've done in Vegas, that they were already structuring meetings with the shooting groups to teach each other how to protect ourselves. And these are things that they were doing, in Las Vegas. And I believe that those things can be done inside of the Twin Cities as well. I don't think that this is the time, just in my opinion, I don't think that this is the time that we should sit around, I don't think we should sit around and let this moment go. I'm a firm believer. You know, I think Nick was right. I believe Rodney is right. I believe you're right as well, Travis. I think that the time is now. I think we played the game so much now that really we should be able to look at home. If you're frustrated with the kids that you have up under your roof under this time, just imagine the people that had to have them at schools. So if you're frustrated with your kids, this is a great time for you to reset how you're raising your children. You get what I'm saying, brother? If you're not happy with who
yes.
you're married to, who you have to be laid next to, if that's frustrating you right now and you see that this is not a team situation in this crisis, it's time for you to move around. These are the things, like, we got to – if you got habits that is bothering you, that you feel like you got to keep going outside every day and you can't sit still for even a day without going to smoke or going to get high or going to do whatever, this is a self-gut check time as well as a self-planning time. So I agree with you, brothers. I feel like that should be the overall message. I know we're all connected via social media. Man, I'm glad D Nice did his thing and the other DJs are doing their thing. But look, man, we are too much in debt, in a deficit with our disposition in this country, to be online partying at a time like this. What do y'all brothers think?
I definitely agree with that. And there's one other, but it just goes to reflect our value system, right? Like, we put such a premium on a very nihilistic view of everything. Don't take it so serious. Life is short. But ain't nobody lining up to go to heaven, you know, when you gotta die. Everybody stops short of, you know, the eternal bliss, because they know some things they got to be responsible for, but they want to shirk those responsibilities. And one other group that I constantly worry about, that we don't really hear enough about what the contingency plan is, there's a lot of mothers who are expecting right now.
Mm,
and the question
absolutely.
Becomes, what provisions are being made for mothers that are getting ready to conceive children this month, this week, today? And how can we get more doulas and people who can help, you know, get to people's homes and have people do in-home births and equipping them with what they need and resources they need in order to get more people to be able to do this? And I think that's going to be one of the areas that we might want to explore expanding, so we can start to take over some of the agency with us, because like literally from cradle to grave, we're born into the matrix. Sorry that I keep using the matrix as a reference, but
no,
it just fits so perfect.
Right on.
No, David Icke is probably
right
about that. Because we are, you know, here's the crazy part about it. All of these things are needed, and the assessments should be done. So what I issue a challenge to you brothers, as well as anybody else that's out listening, is what should the new normal be like for us? Before we get there, what is that new normal going to look like? Because like I stated before, if you don't like the people that you're sitting in the house with and you're the product of raising these people or grooming these relationships, man, you need to do some spring cleaning in that situation. If you're not happy, if you know for a fact that you are in a situation where you can't get to the people that you love because of a myriad of things, you might need to think about, hey, how do I get closer to my family just in case something like this happens or it gets worse? Like you don't need a part two of this to know that things need to change. But clearly, our disposition in this country shows that we need to change. I was so happy to see some of the people who used their common sense and said, hey, I know some sisters who live two different sides of town here in the Twin Cities, and they decided that they were just going to come into each other's home. And, hey, even if they got it, I'm with my sister, and I'm going to be able to take care of her. She's going to be able to take care of me. But we're going to be together, and our kids are going to be right here. And guess what? The money that we got, we're not buying two different types of groceries. We're buying one set of groceries. So the food's going to last. The supplies are going to last. We don't have to do all of those things. I was so proud to see that online because I'm like, okay, those two sisters clearly got it. Where are the rest of us at with this? Like, where is this ideology? I was talking to our brother Olu, and I was telling him about him and his brother, and I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second, man. You're telling me your brother's single, you single, it's another sister from Alabama. Nick, you met that sister at she was at Rondo Days. And I'm like, man, all three of y'all, y'all living by yourselves, y'all should come together inside of your two-bedroom apartments. His brother lives down the hall. Man, you guys go get some groceries. You guys go ahead and do what you need to do and make sure everybody is straight. This is how we have to think, in my opinion, brothers. When the elders been telling us about group economics and how to move as a group, now we have to really show that we can either do it or we're going to be – our hands are going to be on the chopping block. I'll keep saying that piece. And I know Travis is happy with the social distancing, so that way I ain't got to beat him in chess. I get it.
What'd they say, SMH in the new lingo?
And what'd they say?
SMH. I think you're right, too. I think another thing, in addition to what you stated, too, is just networking homes, too. Coming out of the new normal or into the new normal, that's that option where you can move under one roof and stop chasing the American dream of everyone having the big house with the picket fence and, you know, all the things that we've been sold, but also coordinating territories, you know. So if Nick has a space, and Thomas has a space, and I have a space, and we can go down the list of brothers and sisters with spaces, if all those spaces are linked up, where there's almost a bartering going on to where I got this if you need it, or if you got that, you know, then we can make those coordinations work. I think a lot of times people feel like they're operating in silos, but just the grooming of Black America into an outcast group, and then, you know, the psychology of keeping someone from something, it further spurs within them the desire to want to be a part of. And I think we've become that, you know, we've for a long time, for generations, I've wanted to be a part of this American polity. And anytime you go and vote for someone, you're saying, I'm selecting you to speak on my behalf. And so I've always said, well, how can we pick people who have for years spoke against us to then speak for us? And how can we pick anyone who are a part of a community that castigates us and look down on us to say, okay, I'm picking you to represent me from the disenfranchised when you've never been disenfranchised. And at the same time, you're working on behalf of my detriment. And so now the conditioning, we're seeing the results of that as we do every generation, to where we're in a crisis and we say, okay, who's going to help us? And for so long, we haven't helped ourselves. And then when we were helping ourselves, the same people that we now pick to represent us and to vote for, that we vote for, have worked to destroy everything that we've ever built on our own half, on our own behalf, for our own self-sufficiency. And so that complex relationship and dynamic that we have with the United States, because everyone's getting ready to vote now, shortly, and we're going to be voting for people without a black agenda and people who are certainly not someone that we know deep down that's for us, but we feel like we're voting for the lesser of two evils, which is still evil. And you know, it's a trying time, but I think the power in it is that we are a generation of people, and we have people amongst us who can certainly pull out some type of new reality for us that we can hopefully, you know, pass on to the generation coming after us.
I couldn't have said it better myself. 100% agree, brother.
I mean, and that's pretty much, that's real. I mean, you know, but that's why I believe that we have to come with our own particular new normal and agenda out of this. Because we've been shown by the established politicians, we've been shown by the established parties that they're not going to put us first. But I believe if we start putting ourselves first, if we start saying, man, you can't just come and automatically get our vote, you got to give me something before I give you anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like no one allows you to take, no one allows you to take anything from the store until you put your cash on the counter, right? Till you swipe that card. You can't move out of the aisle, right? And we have to become like that with our vote. We have to see what you've done in order to vote. We don't vote first. We don't give you the cash and then get the product later. No. I mean, we don't give you the product, sorry, and then get the cash later. We need the cash before we give you the product. You know, just like when you go in most of the urban communities around the country, and you see gas stations and you see corner stores that have those glass casings to keep people out,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, they gotta put the product inside of the window and turn it. That's how we need to be with our vote. you want it, but shit, what did you give me in the first place to get it? And until I get it, I'm not about to swing this door back this way with that vote. You have to come with that vote.
Yeah. And if I can elocute something real quick, you know, prior to the First World War, there were many experts who believed that the world had reached a state of economic perfection, and they thought it would lead to continued growth and prosperity. But yet, during the early years of the Weimar Republic in Germany, it had underwent a very complete and terrifying financial collapse. And what ended up happening was that the cost of a loaf of bread rose to 3 billion marks. And this is in 1923. 3 billion marks it took to buy a loaf of bread. And so I bring that up to say that the economic reality that's going to take place out of this may force us into a new reality that we didn't want in the first place. So you may, like you said, be sleeping on floors and living with folks that you grew up trying to get away from. You know, it might force you back together with family and force you back together with your community.
And I think that's a part of that value system we really needed. Because if you think about it, almost every other group that's come to the country, our elders used to have that mentality. Used to
Absolutely.
Have a bunch of people one house before.
Yep.
And then we started drinking Kool-Aid because some of us started doing a little bit better. And so they could afford that distance. The reality was
right.
the data plays out that the average household that comes from, you know, a well-to-do family in a black community, their child is not guaranteed stability, economic stability in their lifetime. Most often they end up at the bottom of the totem pole because they just had enough to provide that quality of life while they were alive in, the, in those particular jobs they were in. Those jobs are not wealth-generating in generational wealth machines at all. And this is just something we got to come to terms with, and we might have to get back to the days where, you know, we all stay at the house, take care of your elders and your parents. Stop putting them in nursing homes unless you own the nursing homes, right? And you are providing the care. But I'm for, you know, getting rid of all of that stuff, bringing it back under the roof, and really figuring out ways to take that power then that's inside of that house with all the incomes that are working, and starting to assess and buy property in a different way, build businesses in a different way, run family businesses in a different way. We got to get back to things that make sense. We love to sit back and talk about other communities, but the one thing that I respect is when somebody is doing for their own.
Yeah,
people can say what they want about the community, but they are ready inside this crisis. They have supply chains. That's what literally has me looking at ourselves saying, look, we gotta pick one. We can't keep riding by the seat of our egos. No, I concur. I concur wholeheartedly, and that's where it's at. You know, what a brother say, I saw a video, a brother said, man, y'all call people looking out for their own ethnicity and racism, man. If that racism is working for everybody else, don't you think black folks need to start practicing it? So, you know, I agree with that. I believe that, but this is that time that we do a very hard analysis, and we have to ask ourselves, can we afford the foolishness anymore? You know, I'm seeing so much lately since this pandemic, man, things that we said, man, if this would happen, this is how black folks would respond. Black violence would stop if we were under a crisis. And you see, man, this young brother just got killed on his birthday here, right? Now, he got killed on his birthday, rest in peace, but he was going to a party. Now, we all supposed to be quarantined. How are you going to a party? And we supposed to be quarantined, right? You see that?
Yeah.
Like two things that couldn't stop himself. He couldn't stop going to celebrate his birthday because it was his day. And then the guy who killed him. And you said, man, why would we be killing our own at a time like this? Right? Like, why would we be killing our own at a time like this? So I think it's time. I think coming out of this, I think that we're going to have to really, while we're here, we're really going to have to sit and spend these days probably not so much watching movies like, you know, like I do at night, or reading as many books as Nick does or Travis does. We're going to have to really sit and talk in large groups and spread those groups out and talk about what are we going to do hitting the ground running when this is all over. What is it on a city level, a county level, a state level, as well as a federal level that we can do to make sure that, for one, ADOS folks is getting all of the resources from the government that they need, and for two, that we're making sure that we're getting some of those. Because really what we're talking about doing with the new normal is going back to an old normal, right? Like, can we agree that we're talking about going back to an old normal? This ain't nothing new technically for our people. It's just something that we walked away from. Can we all agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to go back to our old ways. And our old ways is going to subtract a lot of things from our new ways that people are going to have to deal with. And, you know, you're going to have to make friends with the hairdresser. Sorry. You're going to have to make friends with the barber. All of us didn't spend times in the barbershop. Me and Adrian had a long debate over that. I said, man, I grew up with my cousins cutting my hair. I didn't go to a barbershop when I was a kid. You know, we didn't have that money. We went to the cousins. My cousins in Indiana cut everybody's hair. Folks didn't go to barbershops where I was from. How about you, Nick, in Mississippi? So, going to the barbershop or
we took
edge of each other. Me and my little brother learned how to cut each other's hair on each other until we got good. Yeah, and then when you get a little bit of money in your pocket and you can spend it, Trav, then you might strike out there. Something like a big thing, then you might say, I'm going to go to Mr. Johnson on the corner because, you know, I got this wedding or what have you, right?
But most part, we learn how to manage those things. We learn how to, our daughters had their hair done all the time. It used to be a thing before you left the house. Women braided the kids' hair. We got to learn how to cook for ourselves. When I see a mother of five having to go to, she went to the breakfast bar to grab something to eat to pick it up because she couldn't cook breakfast for her kids because she didn't know how. It's like, come on, man.
Mm.
Are we serious? We're at a point where in this crisis, we got to go and eat restaurant food because we ain't spent the time to learn how to cook for our own kids. So even when we talk about the schools not being able to provide the lunch meals for these families, at some point it's wrong for the schools to be dependent upon to feed our kids anyway. These are the things that we allow to slack, in my opinion, as a people. We allow this grossness to happen because we believe that, hey, kid goes home, he's going to be suspended, maybe he's going to sit at home and do video games. That ain't our problem. Home's supposed to be right in the first place. So it's everybody's responsibility to make sure we get our houses in order coming out of this. You know what I'm saying? If little Johnny don't know how to sit his ass down, this is the time to make sure he sit his ass down. Period. And we have to be serious about this. Like, we got to stop cutting people slack. Yo, you got weeks to get it right. You got weeks to get it right. If you come out of here and you ain't got it right, then you didn't want it right. And then what we have to say as ourselves as a people is these people that don't want to get it right, how long are we going to carry that water for them? Because they're like the other groups that we're carrying water for, that once they get to the table, the first thing they do is they cut us. Everybody just cutting the water. I mean, carrying the water. So I believe this new normal, you guys, it's gonna come with some hard ads and some smart subtractions. But it's going to be some people that we're going to have to either get on board or we're going to have to leave them behind. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think that our community is more dynamic than we give ourselves credit for. And as we set that new normal, I'm always cognizant of how people are produced, right? So generally people treat their kids or raise their kids the way they were raised, or they weren't raised at all and they're trying to piece it together, right? So there has to be community to kind of help demonstrate. And sometimes people just need to be wrapped in community where they can see certain things and actually know what they can strive for and emulate and draw from, right? A lot of people are drawing from even more toxicity or even more dysfunction, right? And so what we looking at as a problem, they looking at like, man, you know what my mom and my dad used to do? You know what I'm saying? So we have to meet people where they at, and we have to apply the context of what produced a lot of these mind states that we're dealing with. And that's not to say that, you know, people aren't going to fall off and we're not going to have people that are lagging behind. My attitude, and I don't know if it's just the bleeding heart in me, but, like, you know, I look at the way the Nation of Islam embraced myself, right, and what they taught me. And there was a point in time where, you know, I was much like Malcolm Little. And the reality is all it took was a brotherhood that brought me in, put a board in my back and was like, hey, you know, you got to stand up straight. Do you know who you are? And spoke life into me in a different kind of way from black men and black women speaking life into black women that really up to that point wasn't normal for me. And it shook me because I wasn't used to that, right? But once I realized that it wasn't a joke and it was an everyday thing, and more importantly, this was something that I had complete control over to keep going for myself, it was a no-brainer, right? Like we said, some people learn at a word, other people learn at the fire, right? There's going to be some that, you know, they're going to come to us a little half-cooked. You know, it's going to take that fire to teach them that they need to listen, right? But we got to be prepared for the fact that not all of us are going to be on the same wavelength. And those of us that are equipped to deal with those who are a little slower to come along, and then there's those of us that are ready to move with the ones that are ready to move on the drop of a dime. And there's going to be things that we get wrong, you know, that we don't know until the next generation. And that's the beauty of life, you know, in my opinion. It's all a journey, but we're going to have to get to a new normal, and we're going to have to stop making excuses to be disunified, in my opinion. That's what that's going to boil down to.
Travis?
What's your thought on that?
You know, I always say right is relative, man. And I think the direction Nick went with it is the same direction I was going to go with it in terms of the dynamic community that we have. I think we have so many different thought streams that we're going to have to tune in to certain ones and link those, you know, to make a concerted effort toward an established agenda. There's no way we're going to get, pardon me, that's not possible, and that's not manifested in anyone's community unless you're speaking of, you know, white people capitulating to white supremacy as a modus operandi that functions based on every institution that we walk in and out of, and certainly that they walk in and every out into and every aspect of society. But for the other communities, you know, we have some people that want to be a part of it. We have some people who don't. We have some who want to be hippies. We have some who want to be rock stars. We have some who want to be ballers. We have some, you know, who are conscious and unconscious and who hate the conscious and make fun of the conscious but claim to be conscious. I mean, you know, we got so many different mediums of thought among us, and it's really, that's really the law that governs the human being. It's our mode of thinking. And, you know, if we can sync with a particular thought stream amongst us, then I think we have a better chance of linking people together toward creating the paradigm that we want.
No, I agree. You know, every time, you know, people have, you know, different schools of thoughts for sure. And I'm always for different schools of thoughts, but I'm certainly for making sure that those who are in the who are a part of anything essentially want to do better. Because if you don't, if you have people that don't want to do better and they want the old, then who else is gonna? Who else are they gonna? While they're drowning, who else are they gonna take with them? And that's sure. That's always my concern with us, is because we're one of the beauties with us is the also ugly side of us, is that we're too charitable even with our own lives. And
yeah.
some of us don't deserve that charity. And we have to be frank about that. And that's a part of having a new normal. New normals don't come by undiscipline. You have to have a discipline attached to it. So what would that look like? And we can't make everything that people do personally, we can't adjust, make them adjust that. That's not what I'm saying. But there are certain things that we should be looking at as far as what it's going to take to move forward. And the big I, little U's need to be gone. And the selfishness. And people don't know that they're selfish. I believe a lot of folks believe that this is what they earn and what they deserve. So they don't necessarily know that they're selfish. But there's going to have to be some come to Jesus moments about some of the ways that people are going about life in general. And I've said this until I'm blue in the face. You know, we've allowed people to put themselves in front of our children, literally, where the kids are our second nature. And it's men and women, where the kids are our second nature. I remember sitting in a parent-teacher conference with a mother who didn't really say, who said she didn't have time to help her son with her homework because she was working on her college paperwork, her college term paper. And I'm like, I get that. You know, I understand that in a vacuum. You know, you got to go to school or what have you. But she was really like talking like, no, after this paper is done, I got to focus on my college work. I don't have time. So y'all got to watch what kind of homework y'all give them. So these are the things that what we have to talk about. We got to work towards change. And I'm going to be real. That 1.5 million brothers that they say are missing, that is really hurting our community. Because in my humble opinion, it's going to take a balanced effort and approach to make this work. It's going to take men reinserting themselves in the community where they're dealing with these young boys and these young girls in healthy ways so that they understand that they're protected and allow them to grow, as well as allow women to understand that, hey, you are protected as well, but there's just things that we can no longer do as a community. There's things that we can no longer accept. And as long as we can agree to treat each other like that, then the community works. If you can't do that and we can't protect you, then you ain't a part of the community. We ain't gonna let you. We're not gonna let you let the wolf in and kill everybody. So we're gonna just let you do what you do, and when you out there, we just gonna lock that door behind. Ain't no coming back. And we gotta be strong with that. We gotta be strong with saying, man, you can't come back. Why? Because you felt like you had to go over there. Well, stay over there where you at.
and we're going to treat you like you got the virus.
Hey, Travis put out a post earlier that sums up the balance that we need to strike. I think it was from George Shaw, and he was like, both the optimist and pessimist contribute to society. The optimist, he invents the aerial plane, and the pessimist, he makes the parachute.
He makes parachute.
Right? Exactly. And I think that's what we always have to remember. There's polarity to everything, polarity to a society. So there's definitely going to be people that fall on your spectrum, Thomas. There's going to be people that fall on my spectrum, people that fall on the Travis's spectrum. The reality is, as long as we agree on the value of those spectrums, people will meet the qualifications to end up on the opposite end of that door. And there will be people who meet the qualifications to have mercy and patience extended. We just got to make sure that we're ready for either or. One of the things about freedom that we got to remember is that freedom, real freedom, is nothing more than complete responsibility. And so when we talk about freedom, it's not some feel-good thing. Freedom is all of the work. You know what the kids say, all the smoke? Freedom is all the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
We're ready to take all the smoke for our community. That's when we're free. And when we say all, I mean we're not under no one economic ladder or umbrella. We're not under anybody's education system. We're not under anybody's health care facilities. We're not under anybody else's roofs. And then ultimately, we're not under anybody else's land. Obviously, we have to phase into some of these things, but the reality is we got to reassess about, you know, we got to reassess what freedom is to us and ask ourselves how comfortable are we with being uncomfortable in the pursuit of complete and total responsibility.
Man, I concur. Now, let's see where our time is at. This is, for those who are listening, man, this is rare air. We typically don't allow folks into these conversations because we do them by ourselves. I know Brother Rodney has been chiming in. You know what? I'll tell y'all this, though. And he said the same thing. You know, I feel strongly, though, that we can come out of this with something. I can't necessarily tell you what the directions is, you know, but for me, I know that we have to do something. And, you know, if you're out there listening, I think the conversation, since everybody's on social media, I think that the conversation needs to start on social media. And we need to be asking every day, so what's next? Because to me, when I look at Chicago, I look at places like what's going on in the prisons in Mississippi, I see what they're doing in L.A., I see what's happening out in D.C., and some of the places in Florida where they're shutting off people's electricity. I'm saying that the people can't survive without us coming up with a plan. So what are we going to do besides sit online and talk about what did you think about me when you first met me? There got to be more than we can do. I'll let you, we got 60 seconds. What do you brothers think? And we can close out.
So if y'all trying to get involved, go to blackcivicnetwork.org and just join our email group. If y'all got resources and things that other people can share, put that up on social media. Reach out to me, Nick Muhammad on Facebook. We can link up and get you activated.
I say be well as you will. Get healthy. Get organized. Get self-sufficient. And get with the community.
All right, and without saying these last 10 seconds, this man, just make sure you take care of yourself, your loved ones, and think smart. A new normal is fine, especially if that new normal is going to help you go further. Hey, brothers, I want to thank y'all, as well as Brother Levon, for allowing us to use this platform to get this in today. It was real good talking to y'all like we typically do, man. Love you, brothers, and I love everybody out there that got that melanin in their skin and call themselves ADOS as well. Y'all be easy, and we'll see y'all on the flip side with a new normal. Peace, y'all.